Chapter 19. Lunchtime. Harry and the wretch are eating with the bear, when out of the blue, Snake appears at their table. "Nice work on the troll thing," she says, eyes shifting. "I wish you luck today in the cribbage match." Harry responds with, "I wish you luck on not hating your parents for mixing up such an unthinkable person." She hobbles off. Harry notices the limp and tells his friends that he suspects Snake let in that troll last night as a diversion so that she could get whatever that three-headed dog is guarding. Whatever it is that Snake wants is probably the thing that Hagar got from the vault. Harmony's brain works burn at a mean rate. She says that whatever is in that vault is important enough for Snake to possibly form an alliance, if she hasn't already, with Valmart. Just as this all is coming together, a special delivery is dropped for Harry by a post office bird. The package is looked on dubiously, but soon the three tear away the paper, wondering at its contents. "Willikers! The broom I wanted way back in Calgon Alley. The Necromo be Nimbros Alifasagoso. Who could have done this? Well, well. Maybe it was Softcastle McCormick. Wink, wink, Harry. Wink, wink." Now imagine a music, dear readers, heavy with cellos at a rapid staccato. Cellos held between thighs in a dark room, the little room of Harry's chest, as he walks with his teammates to the opening gate of his first test of cribbage. They are a ragtag group of champions, this bunch, and with Harry the near-perfect new god, they know they will dominate the day. Harry is a world laced with rivers of wizardly blood. He is ready. He throws his leg over his steed and rips the air a new one as his teammates and he swim through the air, testing out the space of the enormous field of play as the announcer squawks a fact that begins to drive the blood up in all of the chilled spectators. Slytherin versus Gryffindor. The autumn air puts up an icy fight, but the heat off of Harry alone warms the airy field of play. Whoosh and whoosh, the players take their positions. All of Harry's worries and hang-ups and personalities are left in the locker room. Here, it is only the seeking machine that is Harry Potter. He is so ravenous, he can hardly keep from flying over and chomping the fingers off his opponents in a gesture of what's to come. "Just blow the fucking whistle," he growls. Soon, Professor Catface Meowmers is on the field and releases the balls. That snitch brings the animal and Harry right up to his eyeball skins. That snitch is Harry's desire, his fucking life. Harry knows what he has to do, and I'd warn God himself not to get in the way. The big ball is hauled around the court by a beautiful girl from Gryffindor, who, without hesitation, crams a few points up Slytherin's bum with an effortless play. She will indeed be an asset for the few years that she will attend Gryffindor. High five, collapse, and the ball is back in play, Slytherin's favor. The crowd is half frozen and unresponsive. I guess they need blood splattered on their faces to keep them from yawning. The most hideous boy in the world has the ball. He has a lumber pile in his mouth that he is calling teeth, and he is a mean SOB. He goes for some points, but is denied by our bloodthirsty Major Wood. Swarm, swarm, swoosh, and swarm. The ball goes back and forth again. beautifully powerful, earnest warriors of Gryffindor handle the ball and release it as a team past the obviously inexperienced Slytherin goalie. Fuck yes! Harry releases a primal yelp. Surprisingly, again, the crowd seems sedated in the presence of such history-making titans. The ball is again Slytherin's, but is denied again by Major Wood. Joey Lumbermouth, though, pounds a ball right at our goalie, and blammo, he's down on the sand, out cold. Harry positively ignites with rage, and Lumbermouth shows his namesake as Hardcastle McCormick worries under her muffed ears. The game proceeds, and Slytherin decides that they will just burn a few points without the watchful eye of Wood. Fuck, Harry snarls. The game proceeds again. Harry could kill everyone for this. Woodpile and Ernie play rough and unclean on a beautiful Gryffindor player. Those boys are just fucking awful. They railroad her into the bleachers, and down she goes. Fucking shit, says Harry. He is all but hulking out at this point. Everyone is outraged as Slytherin scores again. The game is tied at chapter 20, and Harry is a pensive, hungry falcon. Once the snitch twitches into Harry's view, he is off in a meteoric streak of red. But just as HB zips after the snitch, his broom starts freaking out. It's as if someone had a hold of the broom and was trying to shake HP off. Is he a bad seeker, the crowd ask? No, I think his broom is cursed. Harmony, through her ocular enhancing spell, spies Snake. Snake, oh my god, of course. She's putting a spell on Harry. Ah, something must be done. Ronnie the bear curses that snake a good one as Harmony creeps away. Harry continues to flop and roll in the air like a donut of sorts. Oh no, his big break may break him. He's barely hanging on. Mouth Oil is overjoyed. Snake continues her magical broom shaking, and Harry yells fuck word after fuck word. Harmony, though, like a phantom, creeps up the darkened backside of Snake's bleachers. She is so worried that Harry will die. He's the only person who is nice to her. So she conjures up such a hot foot spell, Snake will have to remember it until she is in the grave, where no more hot foot spells will ever tread. Eh, yes, Snake is so distracted, she wrecks all those around her. Queerman, Monster Mash, Zoomacroom, they're all pissed at Snake for tossing her about so wildly. Queerman is queerly intent on the game's proceedings. But Harry has gained control and is after that snitch like a fucking rocket. Ziff! The Slytherin Seeker has been after it for a while, but I feel bad for him, because he is stupid, and Harry is a rocket-eyed animal who will stop at nothing. Yes, they crash each other as the snitch leads them straight down. Straight down into certain doom. Yes, they're going to crash, but Harry loves death. He says, bring it on. Harry is like a demon long dead with nothing else to lose. The weak-ass Slytherin turns away, but Harry pulls up just in time. He is standing on his broom like it's an extension of his body. He reaches out, almost having the snitch, and falls. Oh my god. Is Harry gonna vomit? Of course not. Like a leopard, Harry used his voracious mouth as his catcher. He's got the snitch in his animal belly. And pop! It's out. They've won 100,000 points for fucking Gryffindor. The crowd goes absolutely bazonkers. The champions in red and yellow are the victors. Harry is spent. The crowd is destroying its throats, calling Harry's name. Harry feels right with himself. He's down there, a new god who has found his calling. He holds up the snitch and bellows, I am a beautiful animal. I am a destroyer of worlds. I am Harry fucking Potter. And dear reader, at last the world was quiet. Chapter 21. Obviously, our friends have explained to Hagar their fears about Snake. Hagar won't have it, even when Harmony explains the spell she saw Snake doing, and the bloody leg, and the hot foot she gave him. All this does nothing for Hagar. Hagar tells each of them to bugger off. Then, in his rage, he accidentally drops the name of Nicholas Flanell, in association to Dumbledore in the vault. Fuck! He yells so loud that the birds rattle out of their trees. You fuckers made me spill the beans. The kids are unmoved by his outburst. They press on with questions. Who's Nick Flanell? What's in the vault? Are we to die in our beds, Hagar? Hagar has obviously had enough and turns to leave. Harry notices that he leaves with the face of a leaving father. A father that leaves forever, if you know what I mean. Christmas time snowiness flakes the castle gently. The scene opens with Hagar the Horrible dragging through the snow the largest Christmas tree available. High, happy music follows him in. There is a busy bee atmosphere, but not your typical busyness you find at the holidays, but an exodus of students packing and groveling as a few gross-looking professors dick the halls of the school. Harmony makes her way through the mostly empty cafeteria and sits down with our heroes who are testing their strategical wits with the thunderous game of chess. Though Harry is, of course, Ronnie the Bear's superior in most fields, it is strategy and planning that the bear is known for, among other traits, I'm sure. Harmony feels small in their presence and decides to split hairs with the bear. Say, Ron, you look tired. Have you ever been tested for diseases? Ron replies, at least I'm not a hideous fucker. She says, are you going home for Christmas? I'm going home. I've got money. He says, no, we're staying here. We're going to find out who that fucking Nick Flanell is and rule the fucking school. So run home and open your presents. I hope you get a new pillow to cry into. Shit. Christmas morning. The snow of Christmas morn falls like angel shit as Harry fumbles through his last dream and into yet another chink in life's impenetrably armored succession of days. But behold, Ronnie the Bear has assembled a fine morning's fire to take the edge off. He's wearing a sweater that he himself has made out of a dragon's hide. You've got a strange bag down here with your name on it, HP. Harry overtakes the stairway like an oiled gazelle, and in moments is scrutinizing the gift's card like a detective. Alas, it yields no real clues as to who may have sent it. Ron watches on in boredom. He wonders what evils he could be slaying right now. But he thinks of Harry, who needs this simple joy of Christmas. Ron, for a moment, is thankful for his own gigantic family. Harry, from the bag, displays a sick-looking cloak. Ron jokingly demands Harry has to model it. But lo, ho, ho, readers. It is a cloak. A cloak indeed. A cloak with a cloaking device. An invisibility cloak. Our two heroes stand for moments pondering its uses, their dastardly juvenile minds running wild before a practical plan presents itself. Chapter 22. The scene opens in the school's library, and a mysterious floating lantern is making its way alone in the darkness. It is our Velveteen Hamlet tipping on toes towards the restricted portion of the library. Once he is in, he is scanning and scrutinizing the spines, looking for two words, Nick Flanell. Impeded by its heaviness and feeling like a fraidy cat, Harry cast off the cloak, feeling brave enough to challenge anything. Once visible, he draws a random book off the shelves just to sample some of this over-talked about restricted content. But wah! Ah! Just as Harry was about to demand of the Facebook the whereabouts of Nick Flanell, the screeching voice of Dazzler issues through the halls. Such a horrible tone, Harry's hand bones rattle and drop the lantern to the ground. It breaks loudly. Harry knows he could easily take this weenie Dazzler, but now is not the time nor place. Invisibility on. Hunching through the library, Dazzler unknowingly grazes by our hero, who is stealth as a kitten in mittens. Dazzler is a man who obviously has never heard the laugh of a lover, never heard the phrase, "You are fine," from a doctor. Harry exits the library as his heart goes out to the man who is servant and friend only to a cat with bloody eyeballs. When, speak of the devil, the cat, the blood-eyed cat, sees Harry. Obviously, the cloak doesn't work on Animalia. Harry quietly treads round the corner, and dear readers, he stumbles onto Snake and Queerman having an excited talk up against the wall, very close and breathy in the dark, romantically arguing heatedly. Snake is demanding loyalty from Queerman, and Snake seems to hear Harry. Oh no, Harry, you're breathing too loud. Breathe into your sleeve, for God's sake. Harry backs away just in time. Snake finishes her conversation. Their eyes display nothing and everything. Dazzler is now upon the professors and displays the still hot lantern. The gig is up. There were kids in the adult books. Snake is off. And Harry creeps like an icy ghost through the halls. Chapter 23. He leads himself into a room he's never entered, just in case they look for him where he usually goes. The room is huge and empty, and Harry's eyes take a while to adjust to the darkness. As they begin to focus, he asks himself, what could that be way in the back up against the wall? Is it a king's mirror? A giant's mirror? Well, why not take a look, thinks our hero. Why not take a deep, telling look? The mirror is warm and perfect. The reflection has no warbles. The form stays true when you move. But as Harry gazes, the mirror activates his magic eye to reveal a secret image. Oh my God. Could it be? Are those my parents? Harry asks. Harry knows they're dead, but could heaven be here in this cold, cold reflection? The parents animate and respond. This is heaven's entrance. He reaches out to feel the blue face of his world's perimeter. He wonders what it would be like, what it would have been if these people would have remained. His mother is beautiful. The guy seems pretty cool too. Harry feels his trapezius along in time with his mother. This is mine, they say in scary unison. The shrugs are working. Next thing you know, Harry is busting into Ronnie the Bear's chamber, disturbing him out of a beautiful slumber. If this is indeed the gate to heaven, he and his champion must enter it together. They swiftly navigate the castle's hallway and cast away the invisibility cloak once into the room of mirrors. When Ron the Mighty is stood in front of the gate of heaven, he begins to denounce it. He cries, "Heaven is for those too scared of nothingness. I will go no further than my mortal flesh will carry. This mirror is the sick bed of heaven, Harry. The eternity of pansy lives. Ronnie will have nothing to do with the mirror. He is only concerned with the flesh and blood of the now. This destroys Harry. Ron leaves him to contemplate his stupid mirror and the design of the cosmos versus the terminal beauty of being a wizard. For 43 days straight, Harry sits in front of the gate of heaven, waiting for either God to appear or for Ronnie to come back and apologize. But to Harry's surprise, neither show up. Only near-dead Dumbledore stumbles upon the vigil. Harry is considerably weakened and actually taken surprise by Dumbledore's presence. Dumbledore starts in. "Don't you want some soup or cocoa, Harry? Come away from the light of heaven's easy life. We need such a valiant, beautiful warrior as yourself here to live and to hack the serpents of evil into hell, into twos, into threes and fours. Your life will be the very envy of heaven and its slobbery inhabitants. No, Harry, you are meant to stride with us, the living, to course with us and our blood. You are meant to end when your share of that blood turns brown on the rocks of glory. You and I shall drink tonight, Harry. We shall drink to life's confines, to life's pearly end, which is the nothingness of death, not the perpetual pansiness of heaven." Dumbledore is shaking with passion. He is beckoning Harry to enter into the sphere of manhood. Harry is all but wrapped in a buffalo skin, dancing and shaking a bow and arrow around a ceremonial fire. His rite of passage is here now. He's like a young Native American preparing to answer the question of life. Dumbledore is all a quiver, awaiting Harry's answer. And Harry answers, "Yes." Chapter 24. It's a perfect, clear morning as Harry steps out into the muffled crunch of snow of the courtyard. Harry looks like a man just married. He does a few ponderingly paced laps around the frozen fountain and then decides to proceed. He sends his owl up into the clouds, then he enchants the bird with a spell. The rarely used winter begone spell. Harry is eager to get back to life as it was at Hogwarts. He is eager to have the story return to its tracks so he and everybody else can find out what's in that fucking vault. A spring sun shows pledge streaks on a dark wooded library where kids once again bustle about. Harmony strikes gold in a giant hardbound atlas. While she was at home, she worked a temp job playing piano in a jewelry store. Wisely, she wore a hood as not to distract the customers with her hideous visage. But, whilst in the store, she kept hearing coincidentally Nick Flannel's name. It was then that she began to formulate her hunch, which, in this atlas, she confirms. Nick Flannel was the inventor of the Sorcerer's Stone, a rock with enormous powers, such as lead into gold, horses into gold, immortal life, giving ghosts a restored body, frag trolls, trolls into gold, etc. The stone is being guarded by the three-headed dog. The stone is what Snake must want. She wants it so that she may live forever with a stockpile of gold. Holy shit, it makes total sense. Our heroes walk briskly through the night, making their way secretly towards Hagar's shanty. This guy is hoarding secrets, they think. But once he sees who's knocking at the door, he slams it right in the kids' faces. The kids start to yell out, "Hey! What about the Sorcerer's Stone? Does that ring a fucking bell?" The giant knows they mean business. They start in on Snake, and Snake's needs again, but Hagar gets testy. He explains that every teacher is protecting the stone, including Snake, with spells and dogs and flying hatchets and cats and ancient pendulums, etc. He seems to be in pain. Hagar continues to be distracted with something behind him. After a while, Ron gets sick of the game and demands to know what's wrong with Hagar. Why does he look so haggard, and why is he hiding something? Hagar breaks down and lets it all loose. One day, a few months back, I was hunting in the forest alone. I had shot a stag and was tracking his blood trail through the forest. As I got deeper and deeper, I felt I was being followed, and I turned around and shot my crossbow, but my arrow only went through the ghostly form of Valmart. He demanded I give him the Sorcerer's Stone, and I told him that I couldn't. He then pointed his wand at my stomach and struck me with a mighty spell. Next thing I know, I'm feeling kicking and clawing down in my gullet. This goes on for weeks. I knew I was becoming a mother, but to what? Later on, after a boating accident in shark-infested waters, me and some friends were stranded, treading water, while sharks feeded on us. One by one, we disappeared in a cloud of blood. I alone survived. The reason is this. My baby inside me was screaming and making such a riot in my belly, the sharks were afraid to open me up. So they let me live, and I was found later by some fishermen. A week ago, I finally birthed this egg. Apparently, I'm the mother of a dragon. Now, kids, don't tell anybody. It's illegal to have a dragon in here. After the story's confusing conclusion, who should appear in the window but that panda cub mouth oil? Spying! After his fucking ass! Our heroes walk through the halls, talking of plans of trapping mouth oil and torturing him, when they are stopped dead in their tracks by Hardcastle McCormick. She takes them into her office and dons her demerit costume, hat, and all. This must be serious. 50 points deducted for each of you. It is forbidden to be out at night. All of you have detention, even you, Mouth Oil. Mouth Oil tries to protest, but soon he is overrun by her barrage of degrading talk. Spies and thieves, she spits. Spies and thieves. Her spittle becomes acid and lands on each of their cheeks, burning little pock marks as reminders of their transgressions. They will never forget. Chapter 25. Later that night, Dazzler leads the four kids out to their duty of detention. It turns out they have to hang with Hagar in the old forest all night long. Yuck! Soon, they are up around the crossbow fire where detention always gets started. Hagar speaks of his dragon flying away and how he's sad. Dragons have no heart, he blubbers. The cat's whore, Dazzler, winces and grinds out words as he does, but no one cares. Not one fucking soul. But he goes on to grind out sentences on werewolves and the like, blah. His voice is as hard to listen to as a dying loved one calling out to you for help when you are restrained. He gives up on using his words and tries to communicate only with his eyes. Oh, how they bulge and struggle to convey unthinkable meaning. He is trying to say that the kids will surely be destroyed in the forest, so it's just as well that he is indecipherable to the children. Hagar finally breaks up this stream of incoherence and signals that it's time to go. He grabs his crossbow and his scabbard full of arrows. Leaves are even scared of this cold, evil place and never settle, but try to ride wind out from among the trees that have dropped them. Hagar kneels down to a shimmery pool of unicorn urine. He explains that a prize-sized unicorn is nearby, and with their help, he will kill it with his crossbow and win a prize in a local contest. The kids seem truly interested in the hunting lore Hagar bestows. Unicorns travel in pairs, unicorns are white, unicorns like apples, etc. Hagar seems put off and talks like he's halfway there. His dragon's runaway stole his heart. Hagar decides to split up the group, and everyone is eager for the hunt. Harry and Mouthoil are teamed up together. Now, Hagar only does this because Harry is an enormous threat, and even though Mouthoil is a son of a fuck, he is a powerful little prick. So the two are put together, seeing how they'll probably do fine without the help of Hagar and his crossbow. Harry and Mouthoil take the northern part of the forest. The other people take the rest, the south, and the west. Harry and Mouthoil talk of nothing. Their hatred curls about their temples like Caesar hats. Their dog has found the unicorn scent, and they make their way to where they think it's bedded down, into a grove of cool dirt and shade, an inviting nap place indeed. A wasp of smoke hangs low. But ah! They are too late! Their prey has already fallen under the hand of some Dracula. Harry's scar hurts him intensely, and Mouthoil vanishes. He leaves Harry alone, but Harry boldly stands his ground against the Dracula. Harry totally hates detention, and this prize unicorn is his. If he's got to get a little dirty to get what he wants, then fine. Harry valiantly stands his ground against the impeding battle that will ensue. The Dracula is a formidable presence. He is not at all afraid of Harry, and Harry has to back his way up against a giant root to gain sustenance from the tree to make a larger spell. But lo, to Harry's aid jumps a badass man horse who is kicking and threatening wilder at the Prince of Blood Drinkers. The Dracula rushes away, knowing too well his odds are way off in this battle. A man horse and Harry Potter? No way. This man horse knows Harry Potter, of course, and like all the creatures of the forest, Draculas and werewolves excluded, would gladly die with him in combat. Now the man horse explains quickly that the Dracula was in fact Valmort, the scar artist, and that he, Valmort, is trying to get the Sorcerer's Stone. Harry Potter puts to the man-horse a few well-chosen detective questions, like, I thought it was Snake who wanted the stone. No, says the man-horse, Snake may be evil, but it's Valmort who is really after the stone. The horseman leans in close and blows the doors off of our hero's reality. Valmart is your father. That other guy is your stepdad. Your arch enemy, the guy who tried to slay you, the guy who slayed your mama, is your dada. Your dad is a Dracula. Harry just goes ahead and vomits right there. Tears mix in with the puke, and Hagar offers to call the tension off early, seeing the trouble. Chapter 26. Gathered around the fire, four or five cognacs down, our threesome unwinds and works out the details. Neckties loosened, robes unbuckled. They are relaxing. Yes, they were sort of wrong about Snake. She wants the stone, but not for gold, but to resurrect the Dracula Valmort so that he can have a new body and stage a rematch with Harry. The three know Harry is a badass, godlike animal, but if Valmort gets that stone, he may kill the near-dead Dumbledore and take over the school. Harmony takes a giant swallow of cognac and says, "He was never a dad to you, Harry. You're going to have to fight him. You're going to have to beat him." Harry knows this is true. Finals. The courtyard looks like an anthill. Our three stroll confidently, but Harry seems to be nursing a head that dealt with one too many cognacs. The tests are pretty easy compared to the shit these guys are doing in their free time, and Harry sometimes wishes his life was as simple as Upfish's. They talk of lunch and break out onto the common ground, when a child's summoning tone spills over them and they are helplessly compelled to Hagar's hut. Hagar has done a little head work lately and decides to confess that last night he told a Dracula-looking dude in a bar that the three-headed guard dog falls asleep easily when he hears music. Hagar had to summon the young detectives to get this off his chest. Harry is inconsolable. What could have made you say that? What do you think this is, a fucking free-for-all of facts? Why don't you go and get on the school PA and tell everyone my dad is Valmart and I'm half Dracula? What fucking good are you? Why don't you learn to keep a goddamn secret, you hairy piece of shit? Harry is ragged. He has had a long day, and good manners are secondary to his cause. Harry and his team rush into Hardcastle's class, all gangbusters. They start explaining that the stone is in danger and that they have to get Dumbledore in order to protect him. Hardcastle is flabbergasted with all of this news. She informs the kid that Dumbledore is in London for the weekend. "Crumbs and carrots," cries Harry. "The stone is doomed. You better be up there guarding that stone personally, Hardcastle, because if it's gone and Dumbledore gets hurt, I am going to hand you your ass when this is all said and done. Fuck this." Out in the hall, just as the three detectives are beginning to form a plan, who but Snake arrives and darkens the hallway with her black robes galore. "What are you kids doing here? We fucking go to school here. You will be schooled here. You are so fucking stupid," says Harry. And a staring match ensues. A staring match of silent restraint. Of course, Harry is the victor. As Snake takes her leave, Harry turns to his brother and sister in arms and declares, "I will fucking feel her blood on my hands tonight!" Chapter 27. A disturbingly meaningful fog hangs cataracts all over Hogwarts. As our heroes walk down into the Gryffindor common room, they see the frog reclining in the armchair that can only be owned by Upfish. Upfish, in a foolishly loving gesture, tries to keep our heroes from tasting victory tonight. He puts up his hands and sucks in his stupid quick breaths. He is sweet, but he is being a nuisance. So Harry, wasting no time, dispatches Harmony on Upfish. A quick popsicling spell, and Upfish is out. They decide to just leave him there without a blanket so maybe he could think about what he's done and what brotherhood really means around here in the Gryffindor school. Soon, under the cloak of invisibility, the three make their way up to the Chamber of Secrets, where the dog lies and where the trap door to all adventures begins. Again, Harry lets Harmony take the lead. She is so much faster with the lock spell than he is. The lock is dissolved into a dove, and the door is slowly advanced open. But the children are disgusted to see that the dog is already fast asleep. Snake has beat them to it and has set up a magical harp. Our heroes sadly begin to set to work, moving the dog's hoary paws off the trapdoor. This isn't as easy as it sounds, for they have to do it noiselessly, and they try their best to silence their grunts and keep all of their efforts inaudible. Harry notices a strangeness. It's too easy. It's too quiet. And oh shit, the music has stopped. Just then, the giant dog awakes itself and is much faster than last time. It goes right ahead and takes a big chunk out of Harmony. He bites what is most of her head off. She is dead in an instant. Harry is horrified. Out of him comes powers he didn't even know existed. He turns the dog inside out and then dissolves it into a pudding, where Harmony is laying there in two pieces. He then, with eyeballs turned completely white, recapitulates her form and makes her whole again. She is full. She is Harmony of old and is acting like nothing ever even happened. It's a true marvel, and Harry doesn't know what to think about it. So they go ahead and jump into the trap door, but they land on what I guess is a wad of leathery roots that seem hell-bent on rending the wizard kids limb from limb. Their bodies become ensconed in the wet black leather, sinking like quicksand into the wads of captivity. Harry can't help but notice the coincidence that last night he ate spaghetti. It's funny to him that what's trying to kill him on the outside is just like what's nourishing him on the inside. Harmony has escaped with some sort of shrewd spell. She tries to explain it to the others, but they cannot understand. She casts a release spell on Harry, and he is freed. And she tries also on Ronnie, but it just doesn't work. Why won't it release Ron? Does it know it can live on the sustenance of such a warrior for years and need not worry about eating anything else? Well, whatever the spaghetti is thinking, Harmony again proves herself and blinds the wad's hidden eye with some crazy sunburst spell, and it soon releases Ronnie the bear. He is freed, and they are able to go after the stone. Harry is thankful and for the first time actually voices his opinion of Harmony. "You are amazing," he says. Chapter 28. Harry is totally disinterested in the next challenge. He runs through this problem like a set of crunches as his mind's eye daydreams. He sees himself dressed as a conquistador, crashing in the phases of werewolves and Bigfoots with an enormous telescope. He then goes on to envision himself arriving on the coast of an undiscovered America. He mingles peacefully with the natives and trades secrets of magic with their shamans. He makes friends, blending bloodlines of greatness. He teaches them wizard spells, and they in turn teach him how to fly across the continent at ridiculous speeds. He learns to slay deer with laser beams from his eyes, and how to make all things around the house out of buffalo parts. Harry could live with a woman who had strong, magical, jet black hair. She'd be enchanted and almost a giant. She'd carry Harry around on her shoulder as she walked through the forest, and he'd hold on to her perfect ear, smiling. They'd fly off into the clouds and spend weekends up there, dictating the North American weather patterns. He'd not worry about clothes because he'd wear one of those strappy skirts that were popular back then in America. But then, that world of America, of light and natural beauty, of those people who are so one with the perfect ecosystem, that world dissipates, and Harry is back in the dark, hoary bowels of storm-ridden England, trying to save all of wizarddom from his crazed Dracula ghost father. Harry almost sobs, but moves on. He is a true champion. As the three traipse through the dark hallways of hell, they come upon a challenge fit for only a bear. Giant sculptural figures stand in lines of two, opposing one another. This could only mean one thing. It is the famous chessboard of Ragnarok. The bear enters out onto the board like a World Series winner going for one more World Series win. The board is illuminated then by magical fluorescence. The deal is this. Harry and the gang cannot pass without winning this game. It is a raw deal in red heat. If you lose, you die. Soon, it is apparent who should take charge of this part of the challenge. Ronnie the Bear begins to dictate how the next couple of moves will happen. I will take charge and make all of the moves. You guys keep your mouths shut and try not to get in my way. You act as a Bishop Harry, and you act as, well, I guess a rook. Harmony farts a nervous fart, but no one cares. Every one of Ronnie the Bear's atoms are focusing on the task at hand. Imagine God creating, and then you would have a beginning of understanding of the bear's massive cerebral cortex at work. This invisible opponent must have invisibly shat himself after Ronnie's first move, knowing the challenge he was about to face. Every battle the Earth has witnessed looks like a Three Stooges scene compared to this match. Patton, MacArthur, Custard, and Charlemagne look on as astonished ghosts, stuffing their mouths with popcorn and jujubes. The game goes on like Napoleon on ice, a perfect mix of speed and precision. The pieces explode and crumble and move into position by the will of one Ron Weasel, a.k.a. Ronnie the Bear. There are struggles and losses and pursuits and beheadings. All of the pieces crumble All of the pieces turn dastardly. But nothing happens that is not the consent of the bear. We get down to where the pieces are only a few. Chapter 29. Here now, in the rubble of the last portion of the game, sacrifices have to be made in order to gain the checkmate. The bear's face is a phosphorescent mask of jelly. He is at the last strands of sanity. His mind is swollen and visible behind his retinas. He is mad with the satanic desire to win at all cost. I will die for this! He is a milkshake of all the general's past strategical sinners, and he takes out a flask and sips a bit of peach schnapps. He yells out to Harry, "You can keep all of my stuff if I don't survive this." And he moves himself into formation, out into danger. He is putting himself up to the king and putting him in checkmate, knowing full well that the queen will have his balls for this. It is a move that everyone knows and everyone has to do. But when you're not riding a giant horse out there, and it's just a little piece in your hand, it doesn't feel quite so heroic. But believe me, here it is. Ronnie steadies himself and gazes right into the slit of the helmet, looking for some sort of eyes. But there is none, and Ronnie is felled. Chunks of his horse spray paint Harry and Harmony. She almost goes to him. "Don't fucking move! We finish this now! It's how he would have wanted it," Harry screams. He then moves like a bishop right up to the face of that king and takes out a glove and slaps the king right in the face. "Checkmate, you asshole. That was my best friend." The game is finally over. The two run over to check on the status of Ron, whether he's breathing or not. Harmony nags Harry, "Why'd you let him fall?" "One more complaint out of you, and I will erase your ass." "Sorry, it's just the pressure talking." Harry then goes on to tell Harmony to stay with Ronnie the bear, make sure that his vitals are clean, and to call the president if he's not back in an hour. He knows what is coming, and he is ready for the challenge. Chapter 30. As Harry walks down into his fate, he comes to realize that this is the moment beyond games, the moment he has been waiting for. Whatever happens, he is where he should be. Before him, down in the cellar, standing before the gate of heaven, why, it isn't Snake at all. It's Queerman. Queerman! Queerman tried to kill Harry in the Quidditch match. Queerman unleashed the troll. Queerman is in league with Dracula's and Wolfman. Queerman wants the stone. It's all been an act. Harry is bowled over. He cannot believe he didn't see this coming. Queerman this whole time has been Harry's dad's gopher. Snake was unfairly suspected and is probably a lovely woman. Harry stands before the babbling Queerman and readies himself for combat. He puts on his lucky headband and pops his knuckles. All the while, Queerman converses wildly with the air. Harry knows that his dad is a ghost Dracula, but he doesn't see him flying around anywhere and wonders who Queerman is talking to. The air then, miraculously, becomes thinner, and Harry's forehead aches. The air tells Queerman to retrieve the stone using our champion, using HP as a vehicle, for only innocence can retrieve the stone from the gate of heaven. The stone is locked inside heaven's gates, and only a pure soul may enter. A spell is cast, and Harry is forced to walk up and look into the dreadful threshold of heaven. He cannot help himself. He looks into the mirror, and Queerman demands to know where the stone is. Put your hand in there, boy. Harry says, fuck this, and reaches into his pocket. The stone somehow manifests in his sweaty hand. Oh, God, this sucks, says Harry. He just decides to back away with the stone, and maybe he can get out of here and hide it somewhere else until he decides what to do once talking with Dumbledore. He makes some small talk about how he can't get the stone because once he killed somebody, you know, a few weeks back, and that prohibits him from going into heaven. Queerman then begins to take off his turban slowly, and even though Harry should be making his way for the steps, he's always wanted to see what Queerman's head looks like. Just then, ah! Holy fucking shit! There's a sick-ass face on Queerman's head! Harry almost vomits all over Queerman. Harry's dad face begins to move like a baby just out of the womb. He calls to Harry to join him and how they could use the stone together and live in a golden castle. Harry's scar begins to vibrate so hard and fast it causes a tone that almost makes Harry explode. He cannot believe what is being proposed to him. Chapter 31. That crazy sick-ass face is burning everything. He wants that stone bad. He wants to paddle Harry so hard. He starts telling Harry all sorts of fake shit, like that Harry killed his own parents, and that Dumbledore eats babies, and Harry is confused and scared. This is his dad talking. He doesn't know what to believe and what to hate. He wants to run off. He imagines that man horse would come in here and take him away, and Harry could ride off on the man horse, and maybe they could catch a movie or make dinner or something fun. But finally, Harry comes out of this reverie and holds the stone and absorbs some of its power and waits for the right moment. The flames are licking all about, driving him crazy. But that sick face is still talking. It wants that stone so bad. Harry can't believe it. He's never seen such rage. This is not me. I am not my father. I could throw this stone into a gutter and not give one shit. So just then, Queerman whooshes at him. He can't take it any longer and lashes out on Harry, choking him and spitting in his face, trying to kill our champion. But Harry gives a ferocious growl and burns that fucker with a flaming hand spell. Queerman recoils, but that sick-ass face on the back of his head just won't have it. He continues to press Queerman to get the stone. Get the stone! Queerman rages for the stone, but Harry valiantly lays his magnificent hands on his face and instantly turns the entire body to crumbling ashes. At long last, Harry is given the opportunity to cry out, I am gigantic! I am important and unavoidable! For anyone who shall traverse this world, I will be what they have to go through. Harry yells down into the empty neck hole that he He yells down into it. This game is over when Harry says it's over, and no one else. Harry is the one who kills around here, and Harry has killed you. I killed you, Dad. Harry picks up the stone just in time to turn around and feel his dad blow through him, just as everyone has their dads blow into them like a kite of chromosomes blowing on the wind of inheritance. The stream of the ghostly Dracula exits, and Harry falls asleep. Harry then dreams of nothing. It is the most pleasurable slumber ever. Chapter 32. Next thing Harry knows, he's waking up in the student infirmary. There are flowers and cards from presidents and queens and diplomats. And Harry yawns and collects his glasses. He seems pleased, like a man can seem pleased. In walks Dumbledore, near dead and beautiful. He talks about Ron and Harmony and the Stone and Nick Flannel and Valmart. And fathers, and the way fathers can show up on the back of people's heads even when you least expect it. But Harry is way beyond that. He just wants to kick back a few cold ones and get through finals. Harry is eager to move on, and he asks Dumbledore if he has seen that man horse around. And Dumbledore says no, but Harry sees a glimmer in his eyes. Harry seems to guess that God would be happy to know that Dumbledore would try to keep Harry from such a union. But for Harry, God is no thing to worry about. They continue to chat about death and stones and next year and whether or not they plan to replace that one teacher that turned into ash. And then Dumbledore leans in. Your dad and I, we go way back. He was an evil bastard, but I loved him. I loved him so much. He proofread my novel. He liked it. He was the only one. This information seems to set right with Harry. Even though he knows his dad is pretty much the quintessential evil person. He doesn't like feeling disconnected from his ancestors. He then goes on to wonder and worry about his mother, and whether or not his mother will return to Earth in the form of a gas and show up on some lady's head and go crazy for obtaining some powerful stone. But anyway, he decides not to worry about it, and Dumbledore begins to pick over what's left of Harry's candies. Nurses scuttle about and make little actions that Harry decides will be the perfect thing to fall asleep to. Dumbledore, the scavenger, takes his jelly beans. Harry just doesn't care. Chapter 33. After a while, Harry decides to leave the infirmary and put back on his cloak and tie. He walks out and encounters his playmates who have been anxiously awaiting him. They quickly compare notes on their adventures and exchange shit-eating grins. They all feel great. The cafeteria is a crazed sea of almost vacationing students. The only thing that stands between the kids and summertime is the terrible Hardcastle McCormick's Hokey Points Award Show. Dumbledore laments another year closer to heaven, and then begins the telling of the points. Gryffindor has a measly 312 points. The students, well, their morale is very low. Hufflepuff has 420 points. That's pretty good. Viacom, well, this year Viacom has earned 480 points. And Slytherin has 6,000 points. Coming in first, they are the champions. But however, says Dumbledore, last minute points are thus. Snake is seemingly on the edge of her seat. For the wretched Harmony, and aiding some unmentioned titans, and knowing your spells, you are awarded 300 points. Everyone claps, and she feels welcome amongst her peers. Ronnie the Bear Weasley, you are bravery. You are courage. You are chess. 1,000 points. The applause begin to increase. And of course, Dumbledore goes on, the keeper of our hearts and the true magician who has bewitched us all, the Adonis, Harry Potter, receives 6 million points for vanquishing the Dracula. The crowd goes apeshit, clapping and clapping. This means that Gryffindor is now the champions of the year. They get to hold the Stanley Cup, and no one can say otherwise. The entire cafeteria, mouth oil, Snake, and pit stains included, join in supporting Harry. The applause are gigantic. The universe accepts only love today. Everyone is in accordance. Dumbledore sings a little pleasant song that sounds like a flute that was designed by Jesus Christ. Gryffindor destroys the other schools in points, and a totally beautiful glance and wink is shared by all. The hats begin to fly, and now thoughts of summertime are rampant. Everyone who does not suck begins to clap each other on the back and smile. Chapter 34. Everyone is packed and has emptied out their dorm rooms and is boarding the Hogwarts Express. Summer vacation is about to commence. Harry must have a word with Hagar the Horrible before he leaves. He tells his friends to hold up and make sure the engineer does not leave him behind. Before Harry can say one word, Hagar produces a beautiful portable television with a clip of Harry's parents already queued up for Harry's delight. This is the first time that Harry actually looks upon himself as a baby. This feels really weird, he says, and Hagar nods knowingly. They hug awkwardly and talk a bit about next year's problems, whatever they may be. And then Hagar tells Harry that he's got to go trim some hedges and make things right for the summer. You have to, you know, put seed down for ticks and stuff. And Harry says, well, I've got to go back home to Pivot Drive and all, so I guess I'll see you. Turns out that they do like each other, and it wasn't all out of obligation. Harry thinks he'll come back next year. He'll come back, and Hagar will be there waiting. The end. Jesus Christ. Yeah, wave. 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 And goodbye. Yes. Chapter 35. Now, this is not in any way an effort to make money. This is a free thing. This is J.K. Rowling stuff and Chris Columbus and all those guys. I was just a fan who liked Harry Potter and not trying to make money or infringe on their trademarks or copyrights. I'm simply a guy who had a little bit of time on his hands and wanted to do something fun. And I hope you don't try to call me up, because I don't have any lawyers and I don't have any money. And it would be a waste of time, because I just made this for my friends to listen to and look at. And I know that the content is a little over the top for a kid's story, but, you know, you asked for it, because you've got guys in there with people's faces growing off of other guys' heads and slobbery dogs and... God, you got some scary crap in your books. You know, the only thing that separates me from you is that you don't say fuck. I guess. I haven't read the books. I've just watched the movies. But, man. Anyway, I hope you're not mad if this comes around your way, which I guarantee you it won't. But if it does, just imagine, like, if you... You know, you may like the movie Superman or something, and then you like it a little too much, and you decide to talk all the way through it. And well, doesn't that sound fun? Well, I don't know. Maybe not Superman, but something. I'm sure you've got something you like. At any rate, if you want to call me or get... on to me for doing it, you can reach me at my email at creasedcomics1, that's the numeral 1, creasedcomics1 at hotmail.com, and you can call me up and gripe at me, and you can say that I was wrong to do it, and that or you can say, man, this is badass, I'm the next big book that I put out is gonna have fuck words and Harry is gonna have some different problem. I don't know. Anyway, good night.